This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Hello. Can you hear me? Isn't that mysterious? It's because I've got this thing in my ear. Like Jim Bowie. What was he called? Bowie? Jim Bowie? You remember this thing? He had one of these. How exciting. What a distinguished-looking audience, isn't it? Handsome. I'm going to start being incredibly pompous. Will you allow me to be very pompous? I'm going to start by showing you my five most favorite paintings in the whole world. My favorite paintings, and also perhaps five of the greatest paintings of the world. Now, the reason for this is they are all embodiments or revelations of great myths. So they're mythic paintings. And they are the great myths of the human condition. I'm going to actually write this very strange, read just a little bit of this, then I promise not to be reading anymore. But when you're my age, it's quite good to have something to refer to. Sometimes they are creation or origin myths, as are the great Yongu paintings that I'm going to show you some of. I'm showing you these paintings because I want to tell you that Mulcan's works and my one are about the same things. And I'm going to have a go at persuading you that they're almost as good. No, we're going backwards again. It's a bit of a thing. I told you I was going to be pompous. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you, first of all, this amazing painting. You all know this painting, won't you? Titian's The Death of Actian. Actian surprised the goddess Diana, who is nature, bathing naked in the woods. She transformed him into a stag. He was then attacked and killed by his own hounds. So Diana is the goddess of nature. Botticelli, that's the next one. Two, three, four. Now she represents the natural world. So what is the point? What is one? There's so many different ideas, aren't there, about what this painting is about? But one of the main things is that one should approach nature with reverence, respect, and caution. And it is dangerous to disturb or damage or hurt the natural forces which you don't understand. In fact, it's the absolute opposite of how we are behaving now. We have dug up, ripped up the earth, cut down the forests, and are now so changing the earth's climate that we are on a fast course to extinction. I like to do a bit of, I hate this thing of standing and talking to an audience. There's something awfully kind of schoolmastery about it, isn't there? So I want you to think that you've got a sort of idiot here. And so Turner, isn't that, I imagine many of you have seen these amazing paintings. Now these are paintings of the great myth to do with light and the sun. Ra, the sun god of the Egyptians, or on his dying words were supposed to be God is light. No, there was his dying words were the Son is God. Now we're going to get on to my absolute favorite painting. I will get on to the subject of this talk soon, in about an hour's time. This is another, all about the same sort of thing. This is my fourth favorite painting. And we've got now to this wonderful painting by Caspar David Friedrich. And this one I put up as being the most astonishing painting. Oh, in fact, I tell you what, the light is rather high. Can we lower the lights a little bit? It's really not showing its... In fact, you got a sense then, didn't you, of the sun coming out through those misty clouds. This is, I think, one of the great ecological paintings. It's talking about how the earth is one single self-organizing whole, and that the rain comes, the cloud comes, and then the mists rise in the mornings, and the trees have put out their chlorophyll, and all the different things which Lovelock talks about in his the wonderful book called Gaia, or with Gaia in the title. So Gaia is our great myth now. For those of you, you will understand probably what I'm talking about, and that is that the way we treat nature and how we look at nature, how we is the great mythic problem of our time, because we are in process of demolishing it. Now, I can now start the talk. I've got to do. When I was a little boy in Somerset, in England, my father was an artist, and in his bedroom he had a copy of this Botticelli's Primavera, and it was the first painting I ever saw. I actually think that it's the reason why I actually started seeing the point about being an artist. And the weirdest thing happened about 3 years ago is I realized that this great big painting, which you're going to see next door, I was unconsciously trying to do the same, something, recreate it in some strange way. I told you I was going to be pompous. And in my the painting you see through there is a frieze, a great frieze of plants, and then you peer through to the landscape beyond, and then in the front there's all manner of different figures who are, in my case, all the plants. In this case they are one flora being a plant, or covered with all manner of plants, and then there's these different mythic dances going on. And you see on the right, goddess Flora in the arms of Zephyr, the west wind there, do you see? She is the goddess of flowering plants, especially those that bear fruit, and her son Carpus is the son, the god of fruit. One of the sources of the imagery in the painting is a description by the Roman poet Ovid of Flora's garden, in which the three graces are weaving flowers to entwine the hair of the gods. Now, here is a picture of Mulcan's hands. And what she's doing is she's got some bush beech hibiscus, which is the central bit there. I wonder if I can use my little pointer. I love this because you can make up people. I don't know if it's going to want to do it. It's not a happy... Did it do it? Oh, I'm doing it the wrong way around. Yes, so there is the beech hibiscus, and round here is a darwir, which is an amazing climbing plant, which we'll go and talk about. We'll talk about soon. And now's the time for me to explain how all this happened. Andy said, about 6 or 7 years ago, the Nomad Art Gallery, Angus and Rose Cameron, asked four artists not from Arnhem Land to come up. Three of us were Ballander or White ones, and then one of them wasn't. And then we joined with four of the Yeongu artists. We arrived at Blue Mud Bay and were greeted by Jambawa Marawili, who's one of the great artists, and Will Stubbs hosted us at the Yirrkala Art Centre. Some of you will have been there. It's the most wonderful art centre in the whole world. And For 10 days, we walked around this great floodplain. Blue Mud Bay, Banyala, is on this amazing floodplain. And in fact, is on this floodplain. And I should explain that this floodplain is the most mythic, like a lot of those huge floodplains, is the most mythic and fabled area you have ever come across. That is mythic because the great artists who live all around it and the great elders, their culture is incredibly strong, and there are again and again and again they come into the center with these huge poles or these huge paintings which are mythopoetic paintings all about the creation of that vast floodplain. And during that time, we went all the way up to the headwaters, some of the headwaters. And what was so wonderful was because Fiona Hall was one of the artists, and she, as you know, is passionate about plants. And Jörg Smeiser was so wonderful. And we're told each day about all the great stories and looked for all the plants. And sometimes we moved further up into the more monsoon rainforest. And other times we were back in the center painting away. And looking at all this water makes me want to drink some. So here I am with Mulcan. And on the last day, she said to me, would I be her wawa or brother? Which is the most wonderful thing, because I'd been following her around, and she'd already started doing these amazing paintings of plants. And so for the next 5 years, I'd trodden along these. We had one exhibition which was called Two Old People Looking for Food. in language. And she is a great elder, but also a great ceremonial leader. She's one of the. I've been to some funerals and things with her, and she is telling all the young people what to do and trying to remember, making them remember all the songs and the dances. And she's the frightening woman you've ever been with, but at the same time, also, as you see there, very charming. And so over that 5 years, I painted, do my versions of the paintings, and she did every second day some new and amazing plant. And when one of the things that we did, I got a whole lot of hewn pine slabs from Queenstown, Tasmanian something woods, where you can get these vast slabs of hewn pine, and I shined them, sanded them down, and then I then burn out the summer wood with a blowtorch, so they've got lots of grain, and then I sent quite a few up to Morecambe. And because she is just such an incredible artist, and engraving is part of their traditional art-making processes, Will Stubbs said that they had to keep the slab away from her at one stage. And then when they gave it to her, she immediately did this thing about rake. Now, rake is the thing you have. I expect that quite a few of you, I can see quite a few of you are pretty expert cooks. Now, they are the water chestnuts you get in the tins. When you look at the book, you read the Merkaway's wonderful description of how they smell the air. When the floodplains got all these vast fields of rake or water chestnuts, there's a particular smell. And which reminds me, you do know, don't you, there is this a wonderful book, which is a lot of the nonsense I'm telling you is put better in the book. And so here's a typical example. Here's me doing my version of rake. And here she is collecting, she's a bulwitcher. We might come across bulwitcher. That is another beautiful, we're talking about such rich foods, but also such beautiful, fascinating tropical plants. And as I promised to be pompous, I have to point out to you this piddling little plant there. That is an Areocolon. And its closest relative has just been named Areocolon woolsleyi. Now, there she is, collecting things with her was always such a complete delight. The way she'd feel down into the thing and then find all these things. And then here we are. A gangan, Jurupichpi, with a group where we're finding. Here's Yinimala, who is another great artist who lives at Gangan, and he's collecting a lily for me. But now, wait a minute, I'm going on and going too fast. Yes, so there we are. Now, this is where I have to tell you that Mulken said, she came and she said to several people, she said, I'm going to paint lots of these plants, and one of the reasons I'm going to paint them is that my people are dying because they are eating all the wrong food, and she's passionate about it. And she says, often, she says, look how healthy I am. She's 71. And then look how the younger people aren't. Well, as you know, in quite a lot of Aboriginal communities, the junk food is all they eat. I mean, in fact, when I was up there one time, I realized that for 5 nights I'd had triple warmed up plastic chicken. And that evening I suddenly thought, you're an idiot. And I went down to Morgan and I said, look, I've got to have something tonight. And so off we went. We collected a fantastic meal. Now, here he is. Now here we are. Here's an example of her version and of the plant. And this is would be Gangri or Manmuna, which is the most delicious yam. And here's my version of it. There it is. There's some that I collected. So I had this marvelous time collecting all the different plants. And here I'm going to show you a particular plant called Buakul. Andy is now an expert on all these names, aren't you? When you started, you didn't know quite so many of them. But Buakul is the most wonderful plant, which has these beautiful tendrils which start to climb up under the bark and then round and round and round. And I'm showing you this as an example of what an astonishing artist Mulken is, in that these are all the same plant, but different versions of them from different perspectives and different times of year. And what's so fascinating is, in fact, I think I'll show you mine to show you what a white fella does when he's confronted with plants which are not his culture, is, see if I can do my pointing thing. No, I won't. So there we are. It's got this wonderful kind of tuberous things in the ground, and then here we have it gets under the bark and it swells out into these delicious little tubers, and it grows up and then it goes under some bark, then it goes up and then it starts to flower. Now you see, this is one of my ways of looking at it, which in some ways is a quite Western one, isn't it? It's full frontal. I'm showing it as it goes up and up and up. And what does she do? She is trying to get the inner nature, the inner essence of the way that plant moves and has its being. You know, William Blake said, energy is eternal delight. Now that ties in with this whole idea of mythic things. All these plants, for her figure in her sense of the universe, and she's able to sing songs, she'd be drawing a plant, and then she'd be singing something. And if you get the book, you'll see some of the things that she sang. And so this plant, one of the things it does is it has a circular movement. So in a way it's almost essentially a kind of curling circular kind of movement thing. I actually showed this to Lunig, the cartoonist, and because he was saying, you know, the way he has Mr. Curly. Well, we were saying that isn't that extraordinary that she can do this abstract version of it, and then another time she did. You see, in there's an amazing woodcut too, and here. Oh no, I've got to be very careful about the time now. Who's keeping my clock stopped for the first time in 20 years? What's the time now? And when am I meant to shut up? What? Oh, but I've already been talking a long time. And so this one, she explained to me, and I don't understand so many of her different incredible visions, that this was something to do with painting the plant as you dig down, and then as you look up, and you'll see that sort of concept. So there's me doing that, and here's another version of me doing my version, and here we have another gorgeous plant, which is I did a very big woodcut on, and then in the show you'll see quite a lot of those. My painting is where there's woodcuts, which I've then done rubbings from or printed from. And here's Dananir, which because you're such a civilized audience, I won't show you my painting of its flower. I will just tell you that its scientific name is Amorphallus, peonifolius. But that I could just give you a whole lecture about this amazing thing, which is that sort of size. And so do you remember we were talking about Darwia? Now this is this thing with this curly little... It climbs, there's so many climbers, and it climbs up like a monkey. And here's another way in which in one painting she has got different systems of describing it. And so the funny thing is that plant you've just seen, this is me, my version of it. And here is a wonderful painting of a Caparis, a native orange. And here we are at Gangan, and we found a rare, an extraordinary, delicious bush potato. And so here is the old fellow, a bit later on from when we've been talking, joining up all my different bits and pieces. Save water, drink wine was given to me by a chap called Bales Meyer, and I'm advertising his wine. I don't know why I said that. And so here is these great big slabs of woodcut which I've pasted on using different kinds of Japanese paper. And in the book, there's quite a good description. This is part of my painting halfway through. And so What you see here is me using lots of different systems, like which are collaged, which all are about Gaia as an overarching myth. And so I have tremendous fun doing my own. Oh, there's the Amor Phallus. I have tremendous fun using different systems of drawing from the Western perspective. I'm passionate about the herbals of Gerard and Turner's herbal. Those early herbals had the best pictures of plants, which had the kind of vigor that Mulcan has. And then in the Victorian times, plant things nearly always were, don't even see the roots. There's just this pretty thing cut off from its background. And so here we have the painting which you're going to go in and see, or you've already seen, the great big long thing. And I think a good thing here is, as I've only got 7¾ minutes, is to
5 minutes.
See, this is what curators are like. Absolutely, you know, we artists, we're just, it's a question of whips. And just a few carrots, but mostly whips. Oh. In June 2009, I was standing with a group of artists on the edge of the great floodplain of Garinari. We were looking through a jungly frieze of rainforest trees hung with trailing vines and all manner of climbing plants. In a hazy distance, we could just see where the monsoon rains had left pools and flood debris. Further away were the dim ovals of middens and the dark, voluminous shapes of the sacred banyan trees. Further upstream were the lands of the Madapa clan, where the ancestor Barma had emerged and distributed the law. And in the book I go on a bit more and say how the great artists like Mukunwapanda and Nongarna Marawili, if you haven't seen any of her paintings, you haven't lived. That's right. They do say that sort of thing in advertisements, don't they? And Gunbi Ganambar, oh my God. You're right. It was Jambua who had brought us here to the edge of the floodplain and who now recounted some of these stories. He told us how, in the dawn of creation, a number of ancestor women had come from the coast and were moving up the floodplain. Where they dug for edible roots, they had burst forth springs of fresh water which are still running. As Jumbo was singing this story, he told how, as the first sun rose up over the dark earth, these ancestor figures turned into cranes and flew slowly and majestically towards the sea. In this painting, I've sought to describe that moment in time. I've drawn onto the long scroll of paper the Brolgas as they flew down the floodplain behind the screen of trees and vines, trailing down from the branches and foliage of various trees. And I go on about flagellaria and bush banana, and up into this living screen were various species of plants with edible fruits and tubers. This rich and luxurious frieze of vegetation invited me to employ one of the great modes or systems used by Chinese painters down the years, what is called a shifting perspective, in which, and like in so much Western art, the artist is not restricted to one focal point.
The eye is drawn to mobile points of focus, some close by, some in the distance. The paintings replicate the way one sees things as one goes for a walk in a garden or along a river. So I finish this by saying I've tried to find a way in which a painter from another culture could make a work about a site, this great river plain, of great power and sacred importance, and do so with reticence and reverence. I've painted the land at one remove as scenes through a veil. I hope that the viewer of the work can share this experience as he or she looks through this screen of jungle trees to that numinous world beyond, a world of sacred banyan trees, ancient middens, fresh springs, and brolga cranes forever flying towards the sea. And so that is my moment to say, would you like to come along and see it in the flesh? Oh, yeah.
John, that was wonderful. Thank you very much indeed. We have time
For questions, if anybody would like to ask John anything before we go down to the exhibition. Okay. At the left there, thank you.
Any crocodiles?
Yes. I persuaded a crocodile to walk over one of my drawings, and in fact it's just as well I've got this up, because a lot of the time when I've been up there I live in my camper truck, my candy camper from Katiara, and so once I was up in my bedroom up there and I was sort of peering out and there was a crocodile sort of went across a bit, and then I Next night, I left a big sheet of paper and went to sleep, didn't hear a thing, got out, and then, oh my God! There was a great big all across the paper. And I'm planning to sell it in one of my next shows.
And if you're very clever and you spot well, you'll see some pencil work with crocodiles in the big scroll.
Oh yes, spot the crocodile.
Yeah, spot the crocodiles. And I'll also just tell you a very brief story about those cranes. When we were approached the finish time for this work, there was a little bit of hesitation in John's voice when we were talking on the phone, and well, we might give you another couple of weeks or so, and eventually the date moved along. But then I received that lovely photo with the apron. You know, this is the finished work. And I had a pretty good look at it, but the work that arrived, actually a few little extra bits had popped in there. So, lady in the pink.
I just wondered how interested young people are in, firstly, the plants and the use of them, and secondly, in the art.
Yeah, that's a very, very crucial question. Up there at Yirrkala, when Morgan started doing this, quite a few of the younger artists started going out, and then some of the other younger community did start going out and collecting. In fact, there was quite a kind of rush on the supermarket. How this will go on, I don't know. We're going to distribute and have that book up there in various communities, and I think that the fascinating thing is that it may be like in other communities. There were sort of five or six who you'd have met, sort of younger
younger ones who really now are going out and doing it. But how far that relates to all the other communities, one just doesn't know, partly because there aren't the books to tell them what to get, except, and this is the great point here, is that there's a wonderful botanist called Glenn Whiteman who has done about 10 books of the plants in the different areas. And that's paid for by your taxes. And and I think that's going to help a tremendous amount. But over so much of Australia, the knowledge has been lost. And that's what, in fact, one of the most exciting things about the book was that this is passing on the knowledge for not just this generation, but this and this. Yeah.
You'll see I'm modelling a book here. Part of the deal with our partners was that it would not be a catalogue as such. It would not be a catalogue as such, but a standalone book, because the botanical information in here is relevant for generations, and so a large supply of these will be in the community for community use and use in the schools around Arnhem Land. So there was a question on the back row there.
I hope this doesn't add to pomposity too much, but with a background in botany and an interest in the arts for a long many decades, and luckily visiting that country for 30 or 40 years, I really think I'd like to congratulate you, because I think you and Milken have done something quite extraordinary. In my view, this is the most important exhibition this museum's ever put on. And Mike, and I guess I have a two-part question. I hope either you or person from the museum can answer. A, is there any possibility of extending it? And B, is there any possibility of the museum acquiring it permanently and perhaps exhibiting it, if not extension now, but at some other time?
Oh, the jolly good answer to that is that it has acquired it all. Yes. So they bought my painting and some absolutely wonderful, what were they called? Bought all 120 barks and presented them to the museum.
Yes, I mentioned that at the beginning, that the collection of Milken's works, the barks, the ceremonial poles, those were a donation to the museum under the cultural gifts scheme. And we've added to that by purchasing some of the wood blocks. And some of the prints that you see on display are actually owned by John, but he has promised those to us, so that everything in the exhibition that you see, including the little hairbrush and the bits of ochre, everything will be part of the museum's collections. So the second part of your question was, time be extended, and unfortunately not, because our programs are booked years ahead. So there's another exhibition coming into that space, but we do intend to tour the exhibition. And when we were working together, we haven't used all the things that Milken produced, but everything that's on display is touring size. So that exhibition will start in August this year in the Darwin Museum and Gallery of the Northern Territory. We do have a booking in at Melbourne Museum, and there will be many more. So we are expecting this to tour quite extensively.
Yeah, in fact, the director, our esteemed director, I bumped into just now, and he's just come from China. And he said that it's quite possible they could be interested.
That's right.
So that was the most exciting piece of news. I just must mention the name of the wonderful benefactors who did donate all these works.
It's Wayne and Vicky McGeoch. And that was such a far-seeing and wonderful gesture on their part.
Yes, indeed. They are very important donors to the museum. I think we probably should make a move to the gallery. Oh, no, we've got time for one more question. Any more questions?
No.
Oh, sorry, I missed you. No, I didn't miss you. At the front. Thank you.
I would like to ask you on your mural, there is a space sort of towards the middle, towards the top, that's just the drawings with the pencils and no paint. And it's great to have it because it points out more that what the drawing was underneath. But did you do that on purpose, just to leave without any paint?
Yes. And this is a tip to all of you, there's some famous watercolorists in the audience. I think it's absolutely amazing how, if you have an area of graphite, pencil drawing, because pencil drawing down the years has been just such a superb way of drawing things, isn't it? And then you have, but in some ways it's more kind of head stuff, left-hand side or whatever it is, the more rational side. It can be even more anally retentive. You know, a lot of our pencil friends are... next door to that, very often, I thought enough of the magisterial gaze of the artist thinking they're so important. I actually allowed the plants, enabled the plants to do a lot of the drawing. So that I'd get huge, you see it in the book, huge swags of plant, which I'd pull off the freezer trees, and then I've got seven secret ways of inking the plants up and then putting them on the paper, and there's this very special ingredient which I won't tell you about, and then overnight I put my solar screens from my camper truck on top of that, and in the morning you see a lot of those things are painted by Buerkle or... Yeah. I don't know whether that answered your question quite.
I think you'll be able to see more about John's techniques if you go to our website, to the exhibition page. There's a link to the film that we have in the exhibition. There's a little bit of that in there. But also, if you Google Creative Cowboy... John Woolsey, Creative Cowboy, is not John Woolsey. He's the film company, and they have made a very lovely film about John and his work. So you'll be able to explore through that some of his techniques. But I think we should make a move. But before we do go, a couple of housekeeping things are the exhibition space has a limit, and we. Our audience today exceeds that limit. So we're encouraging you to go to the bookshop, half of you, and purchase a book while the other half comes in and talks with John in the space, and then in about 20 minutes, swap. So play it by ear, will you please? And again, thank you very much, John, for a very entertaining talk. Thank you.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.